maybe in the fall we can start a little earlier. that could be a possibility. Yeah.
Yontif is late this year, so. So I say
Yontif is never. You all know everything about soothsaying there is to know on a Torah. Yeah.
All right, let's go. So since we're going to have a big break after this class.
or this might be the
last. Well, no, won't be the last. But either way, there's going to be a big break. I'm going to jump ahead of my scheduled program because what I was hoping to do is finish this parak and then go back and do a kind of a overview discussion on the whole issue of sorcery and soothsaying in the Torah and in this parak in particular. I'm going to do that in reverse. We're going to do that subject today, because it's kind of a self-contained piece. And then, please God, when we reconvene after our little break, then we'll jump back into this parak and go through it again. But, of course, this parak raises an extraordinary dilemma for us in the form of the role that this Balat Ov plays, Eshet Balat Ov, plays in the conjuring, if you will, of Shmuel in the conversation with Shmuel and Shaul. By the way, just to clarify a little bit of the terminology, this Eshet Balat Ov confuses a lot of people, because Baal is the name of an idolatry in the ancient world. Baal was a fertility god of rain, and Baal is typically associated with Canaanite pagan rituals and idolatry of prayers for deities of rain. Usually ancient deities, especially fertility gods, came in pairs, male-female consorts, and so you had Baal and Ashtoret referred to together. They don't have anything to do with this story. This is not about Baal. This is about what is referred to as Ov, or, and that's what's confusing here, Baal Ov. Baal Ov is the reference to the person who does the engaging with the idolatry. So in this case, Eshet Baalat Ov is not Mrs. Husband, wife of the Baal Ov, right? It means she is the soothsayer, the medium, and she's referred to as the woman who does the Ov ritual, or Baal Ov, or in this case, Baalat Ov, because it's a woman, not a man. It's gender neutral.
So is it sort of like Baal Abayit, that it's sort of the master of a type?
Yeah, sort of similar type of application. So Baal Ov is the name of the idolatry, technically, the name of the activity, and Eshet Baalat Ov is the woman who's engaged in this activity. So that's how he refers to her in Pasuk Zayin, Vayomer Shaul Avadav Bakshuli Perek of Chet Pasuk Zayin. We haven't moved.
361.
Okay. Because that's where we've been. That's where we've been.
We haven't moved.
Vayishal Shaul Bashem. Oh, sorry. Pasuk Zayin. Vayomer Shaul Avadav Bakshuli Eshet Baalat Ov. A woman who is a medium, Ma'alatov, and I will go to her. And then she is referred to as Aisha, or it was before she referred to as Baalatov. Be that as it may, that notwithstanding, the role that she plays in this Ova Nidoni activity to conjure the spirit of Shmuel raises a fascinating debate amongst the commentaries. Revolving around the question, we've raised this question before, we just kind of danced around it a little bit, which is she for real? Or as does the text present her as being successful, really, in conjuring the spirit of Shmuel? What does that mean for her and the whole activity of these mediums, and do they is there substance to their world?
Were there a lot of them?
Well, there weren't a lot of them anymore, because Shaul killed them all.
No, but at one point...
I assume it was as relevant an activity as all the pagan rituals of sorts. And the Torah refers to them in a loop of Ov, Yidoni, Nachash, Kosem, sort of a whole group of them, and we he encountered some of them in the Torah before, right? Bilam is a kosem, Lavan is a Nachash, Yosef pretends to be a Nachash, or Nachesh, Ov. I don't think there's a Yidoni case precedent in the Torah, but nonetheless.
How do they know where to look for this person?
We don't know. They found her.
I would want to know. Yeah,
they found her.
She survived.
She survived the purge. Unclear how she survived the purge, except for the fact that this I sort of alluded to last week. It's unclear how she survived Shaul's purge, but from the encounter that when Shaul first meets her and knocks on the door and says, "Will you do your medium for me?" and her response or her reaction was very, what are you trying to get me killed kind of reaction.
Right. She's not obviously doing anything.
Right. So she's smart enough to know that this is not an activity you bring out into the open. And so I suspect that smarts was partially what enabled her to survive the purge initially. Just clever and insightful. Move it underground and make sure nobody knows. Be that as it may, what I wanted to look at was there's a huge, huge machloket amongst the Rishonim and philosophers of Jewish life from earliest times, really from the time of the Talmud, but certainly through all of the Jewish philosophers who lived through the period of Greek philosophy and beyond and who engaged in it. What do we do with these activities of the Torah's prohibition of Oven Yidoni? Does the Torah prohibit it because it's a fake, or does Torah, despite the fact that it's a fake, or does the Torah prohibit it because it's real? That, in the core of it, is the substance of the machloket. And
a lot of people who felt this was real.
I'm going to show you. There certainly were, and I'm not going to give you all of the opinions because that would take us a year and a half, but I will tell you that every Rishon anywhere at some point or another weighed in on this debate, mm-hmm. on one side or the other, and is often the case with very intense opinions. I'll show you. Very intense opinions. The epicenter of this debate is our parak. Because it's the only parak in Tanakh in which we have not a discussion about them, but we have an activity of one of them. Okay. So here is the debate, whether she's real. So what I thought I would do is do it backwards. Rather than going to the Radak, which sort of summarizes the whole issue on our parak, let's leave that for a moment. Let's sort of do a quick cross-section sampling of the various opinions in the issue overall. So the epicenter in the Chumash of this discussion is a pasuk in Vayikra. The prohibition of Ov appears in the Torah twice, as do many of the Torah's prohibitions. We looked at one of the examples in Sefer Devarim, right? We looked at the relationship between Ov and Yidoni as the negative and Nevuah as the positive, okay? So that we talked about. No, that's from the air conditioning trying to go on and not being able to. Okay? Oh. It's been reported. All right.
Which side are you on?
On what?
On this machlok this year.
So, you know what?
You asked him last week, Dana.
I will tell you my opinion.
Sure he remembers.
I will tell you my opinion, but let's go through the story. So there's two places... There are two places in Chumash. I tell you, I will share. Two places in Chumash where this appears. One we did, which is in Devarim. The other is in Vayikra Perek Yotet, and I put all the sources on the page. So today we're going to work off the source page, other than our Perek, which is going to stay here. Vayikra Perek Yotet. Pasuk says, "Al tifnu el ha'avot ve'el ha'yidonim, al tivakshu l'tom abahem, ani Hashem lokechem." It's a pasuk in Parsha Kedoshim. If you remember Parsha Kedoshim, it lists. It's written like a series of laws that are disconnected and disjointed, just one law after another. Each pasuk is a separate law. There is a theme that runs through them, but not a subject. And here it says explicitly, do not turn to the Ovot, Ov, Baal Ov, Esh Baal Ov, do not turn to the Ovot, or to the Yidonim. Ovot and Yidonim are always lumped together. They're lumped together in the pasuk here, they're lumped together in the pasuk in Devarim, and we'll see in the Gemara, the Mishnah discusses them as well. together, avot and yidonim, do not seek them and become defiled through them. Al tevakshu l'tom abahem. And the Hashem alokechem, and there's that reminder that you engage with God, not with mediums and necromancers and soothsayers and what have you. So, what's the attitude on Baal Ov and Yidoni, and ultimately, what are they? So the Gemara has a very strange description of the activity. The Gemara in Sanhedrin states the following, Tanu Rabbanan, Baal Ov, what is a Baal Ov? Ze hamedaber ben haprakim ubi ben atzilei adav. They speak from under their arms, meaning they conjure voices, they hear voices, the voices of the dead that speaks to them from within the, like from different parts of the body. It's almost like ventriloquism.
Very weird.
Okay. And Yidoni, ze hameniach etzem yadua befiv, they put some kind of a known bone of some kind of animal in their mouth, and it speaks. In other words, these were mechanisms by which the voices of the dead would speak to the medium through some other vehicle, whether it be through a bone or whether it be through a voice from a different location, meaning under the table or under the arm or in some place. Some place. In other words, they're not.
On our Pesach
in other words,
we don't speak through it.
I want to stay. If you don't mind, I would like to stay respectful and focused. So the issue here is that they're communicating with the, let's call them spirits or deceased, but not through their mouth. They're not speaking. The voice is coming from some external location. And that, I think, is the key piece to this Baal Ov and Yidoni. Doresh al Metim are those who speak directly to the dead. They go out into the cemeteries, they talk to the dead, they seek the dead. It's a third category. And then there's two other categories as well of those these kinds of activities.
What is the meaning of avot in the
Vayikra? It's a reference to the ov. Uh-huh. So avot, right? Don't seek the ov or the yidoni, in the plural will be avot. Again, it's the same prohibition as appears in Dvarim, mediums of some kind. So that's the Gemara. Now the Gemara has a lengthy discussion, which I didn't bring here, a lengthy description of various activities of the Ovot and Yidonim over the course of history. It gives an account of various stories in the Talmud, and it would seem to imply, and this is the position of most of the Mefarshim, that at least from the perspective of Chazal had the opinion or had the attitude that these activities were real, that there was some substance to them, but they were like all pagan idolatry, they were absolutely forbidden. But not forbidden because they were fake, forbidden because they may even have been real, it didn't matter. You seek God through prayer and prophecy, not through other external means. There's some discussion as to the relationship. A third activity related to this would be real astrology, meaning to look at the stars and the constellations and to use them to predict future events. In a real way, not like horoscopes that, you know, open up the newspaper, which is all nonsense, but real astrology in the classic sense of the term is also one of these activities that is included in the constellation, if you give the pun, of forbidden activities. All right, I think the most extreme formulation of the nay side is the Ibn Ezra. So the Ibn Ezra on this pasuk, now the Ibn Ezra was known for being cryptic and being critical of anybody he didn't agree with. Ibn Ezra states the following: "Vireke moach amru lulei sha'avot emet gam kein derech hakishuf lo aslam akatuf." Those who have no brains in their heads say that if there was no substance to the world of the Ovot, or the world of magic, Kishuf, the Torah would not have prohibited them.
Wow.
Mm. Okay? So, there is this argument, and it's an argument we'll see put forward by some very significant commentaries, who claim that had the Torah not felt that there was some substance to it, it wouldn't have bothered making it such an intense prohibition. It's only an intense prohibition because it's somehow substantively a mechanism that does engage us with some kind of dark force, dark spiritual power, that is an alternative, as it were, to prophecy or communication with God, and therefore absolutely strictly forbidden. Says the Ibn Ezra, anybody who believes that there's therefore some kind of substance to it, mekei moach, they are empty in the head. They have no brain. On the other hand, v'ani omer, hefach advarim, but I say the opposite, namely, ha'katuv lo asah emet, rak ha'sheker, v'ha'ed, ha'elilim v'apsilim. The Torah didn't prohibit them because they were real. The Torah prohibited them because they were fake. And the Torah prohibited the fake activities of Enidoni. And the proof is in the example of the Torah's prohibition against idolatry. Nobody thinks that these idolatries are real, and yet the Torah prohibited them. So the same would apply to all of these occults and mediums and what have you. The Torah certainly doesn't think they're real, and yet would still prohibit them. That's the debate, says the Ibn Ezra, between smart people like me and empty-headed people like those who believe the other side.
Says it like it is.
The Ibn Ezra called it like he saw it. This was a very, you should just know, open parentheses, this was a very characteristic and common approach in the Middle Ages. Commentaries who wrote intensely, and they didn't hold their punches. Mm. They didn't pull their punches. They used words like Rekei Moach, and he's an idiot, and he doesn't know what he's talking about, and all his words are vanity, the Kodvar of Hevel. You know, Ibn Ezra calls one of them a cow in one place or another. The commentary about the Paraduma, and he says, "For who Paraduma?" It's like, just that was the way the Ibn Ezra wrote. So you should just be aware that that is not uncharacteristic of the Ibn Ezra.
Was this a 50-50 split, the empty-headedness and the smart people?
In the Rishonim, I would say more or less. Amongst the classic commentaries that we are familiar with, I would say you could argue that it was a pretty much a 50-50 split. We're gonna flip back and forth, so we can score it if you want. But we got the Ibn Ezra on one side. Let's look at the Ramban on the other. Ramban is a biggie, right? Ramban is the Ramban. You can't move 3 inches in halacha without the Ramban. Says the Ramban, "V'rabim." This is on the pasuk in Devarim, not on Vayikra, but on the pasuk in Devarim that we saw last week. "V'rabim yitchasdu b'nechashim lomar she'en behem emet klal." There are those who get very pious about this issue and claim that there's no truth to this world of Nachash at all. Who's going to tell a bird? What kinds of activities related to animals and how animals function? We certainly can't deny that which we see with our own eyes. Aval, he says, yesh l'inyan hazeh sod. But there really is substance to it, and there really is a deep Kabbalistic mystical secret to how this all works. And then he goes on to explain, ki yesh l'mazalot sarim, the constellations, they each have some kind of ministering angel over them, yanhigu otam behem nifashot l'kadrei ha'galgalim, and they are kind of like souls or spirits to the world of the constellations. This Rezana, Vitle, Krovim, Laaretz, and then you have the ministering angel of the different types of constellations, and he identifies them by name, and they are described as kind of dark forces. He goes into a lengthy Kabbalistic discussion about what these are. I don't have a clue what he's talking about, because it's way beyond my understanding of the language here, but he links this to the activities of astrologers. And that astrology, which is to read the constellations and to see the signs of the constellations, is built around this principle that each of the stars, each of the constellations, has its own ministering spirit or sar, and they're all under God, but they all operate in a sense independently or connected to God, but somehow these mechanisms are able to tie into or connect with these lower level spiritual forces. So claims the Ramban. Ramban was a mystic, we know that. Built a lot of his commentary around the world of Kabbalah and mysticism. So I guess, from that perspective, Ibn Ezra would consider the Ramban one of those Ray came off. That is a very harsh accusation. Rambam was not only not a Ray came off, he was one of the geniuses of Jewish life and Jewish and halachic thought. There you have it. Ebenezer on the one hand, Rambam on the other. Gets even more interesting. The Rambam has an entire section in the laws of idolatry devoted to a description detailed, seven chapters long, detailing every one of these activities and how they worked.
Wow. Mm.
Meaning not how they worked effectively, but how the mechanisms, how the people did them. Like what was the ov procedure? You took this and you did that and you took ov and you don't, you took this bone, you put it in your mouth, exactly like Gemara describes it. Spends six chapters describing all of these activities. And then he writes, at the end of it all, it's the last paragraph of the last chapter of the Laws of Idolatry. In Source 5. Udvarim ha'ele, all of these things, kulan divrei sheker v'chazavhen, they are all false lies. They're all zero substance to them. V'hem shehit'u behen ovdei kochachmim hakadmonim l'goye ha'aratzot kidei sheinagu achrehen. These were activities that the ancients used to entice the idolaters to follow them. Imagine for a moment, we had prophets to engage us in loyalty to the Torah and to the laws. Well, who guided the idolaters? So that's how why the Torah presents these Ovni and Yidoni activities as sort of the parallel universe to the world of prophecy. Says the Rambam, they were the ones who enticed and who brought along the ancient nations and peoples to follow the world of idolatry. Ve'ein ra'ui li'Yisrael shehem chachamim mechuchamim lehemshech behevlam behavalim elu. It is not appropriate for anybody from Israel, smart people, chachamim, right, to engage in these kinds of vanities. Ve'lo lehalot alev sheyesh to'elet behem, and not to entertain for a moment that there is any kind of substance to them. Shene'emar, there is no activity of nachash or kesem. These are two of the prohibited activities in Israel. It's part of the nevuah of Bilam. And Bilam, who was a nachash and who was a kosem, right, Bilam describes Israel. He says, "Kilo nachash b'Yaakov v'lo kosem b'Yisrael." Israel doesn't have these kinds of magicians and what have you. That's the Pesukim in Dvarim. These nations whom you are going to remove from the land and settle in the land instead, they turn to the Onanim and the Kosmim. Not so, you follow Nevi'im, because I will give you Nevi'im like me. Says the Rambam, anybody who believes in these things, or anything similar, and thinks for a moment that they are actually substantively true, shehen emet, udvar chokma, and there's truth to them, aval haTorah asratan, but simply the fact that the Torah prohibited them, meaning, right, anybody who takes the side of this argument and says that really the avot could speak to the dead, there was a real substance activity there, but the Torah prohibited it not because it was false, but because it was true, and yet prohibited. That's the flip side. That's the flip side. Anybody who takes this position, einan ele min haschalim u'michasrei hadat, they are of in the category of the fools and who have no brains in their heads. Mechasrei da'at. So I would say if you had to put the Rambam into a category between the Ibn Ezra and the Ramban, you could side the Rambam with with the Ibn Ezra.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he came off, yeah. Like, sounds like
right. Right. The Schal and the Rekait and the Chasrei da'at. Okay, he calls anybody on the other side from this very intense debate. This was a very intense debate. They did not pull their punches. Aval balei ha-chokhmah utmimei adat, those who were Bale Chochma, those who are wise and wholehearted and knowledgeable, Yadu Barayot Barot, they know with absolute certainty, Shekol Elu Advarim Sheasra Behem HaTorah Einam Dvarim Chochma, that these activities which the Torah prohibited did not prohibit it because they were real, the Torah prohibited it because they were false. Eletohu Vehevel, nothingness. Shenim Shechu Behem Chasve Adat, the fools followed them. ונצחו כל דרכי אמת בגללן. ומפני זה אמרה תורה, כשהזהירה על כל אלה, העבלים, תמים תהיה מה שאמר ככה. That's when the Torah prohibits them. Torah says, you walk with God, holy, completely. Don't get caught up in the vanities of this nonsense, says the Rambam. And if you believe that there's substance there, and it's just that the Torah prohibited that substance, then you are a fool, says the Rambam, to put it kindly. Okay? So I have in my list of my two sides, I have the Ibn Ezra and the Rambam on the one hand, right? And I have
Ramban.
The Ramban on the other. Ramban is not alone. Come to the next source, which is the Ran. I quoted these sources in particular because these Ramban, Ran, Ibn Ezra, not so much the Ibn Ezra, but certainly the Rambam and the Ran, they are sort of the anchors to any halachic discussion. Any discussion anywhere, in any subject of halacha anywhere in Shas, you can't move 3 inches from the Gemara without understanding what Rashi, Tosfot, Ramban, Rosh, Ran, Rambam, Riv, right? These are the anchors of halacha. This is what every Sugya and Gemara revolves around the halacha. So these aren't marginal opinions. These are mainstream halachic anchors, opinions, philosophers of Jewish thought. So that just makes the issue much more intense.
So the miracles that everyone saw through the Torah, what about the people?
They're real. Absolutely real.
Okay, so they're real, but that's
yes.
The question is, what about the people standing around who are still believing in soothsayers and all the rest? Do they acquire that knowledge? They don't acquire the knowledge that it's through Hashem. They're thinking it's from soothsayers and et cetera.
Well, that was the whole argument with the Chartumei Mitzrayim, right? That's since we're Erev Pesach. That was the whole debate between Moshe and the Chartumei Mitzrayim. Every time Moshe did one of his parlor tricks, the Chartumei Mitzrayim repeated it or imitated it in their own way until Moshe outdid him. Right? So you had the snake, the staff that turned into a serpent. It says it turned into a tanin, which we translate as a snake. It's probably more of an alligator or some kind of a reptile. But be that as it may, he turned it into a snake. And Paro's Chartumei Mitzrayim did the same thing until Moshe's serpent or alligator swallowed theirs and then turned back into a staff. Right. So now already it took it to the next level. You get to the Mach of Kinim and the Chartumim turn to Paro and they say Etzbe Elokimi. Right? This we couldn't do. This was Chazal of this whole. Try to figure out, so what does that mean? And because Chazal believed in these things, they created their own theory as to how that worked. Their powers were limited to that which is larger than the size of a lice, but not anything smaller, and therefore they couldn't imitate the kingdom. Right. Again, it's a debate whether or not you saw in the activities of the Chartumim and the Kusmim and the Nechashim and the Kusmim and the Ovot and the Yidonim, all of these activities, whether you saw them as having any kind of real power or pure wool over the eyes, right? Pure fake.
Trickery.
And we'll see the Radak goes through a lengthy description to figure out if it's trickery, how did she do it? Because ultimately we've got to come back to the story here. Right? So how did she do it? Understand, the debate here was intense.
Well, it should have been.
Right. The debate was pretty intense. They didn't pull their... This isn't a theoretical discussion. This was an intense discussion with accusations. Briefly, I'm just going to show you the Drashot Aran, and then we're going to jump into the famous Radak. Avamashet mihani bezeh, hu inyan ha-kishuf she'asra to'atara b'firush. So let's talk about kishuf. Kishuf is some magic witchcraft. that the Torah explicitly prohibits. V'nichlal yisuro b'parsha zu b'amro lo tase k'masehem. V'ein safek shehu inyan amiti. There's no question that this is real. There's real power to this process called kishuf. V'af api shehu zal katav. Even though the Rambam writes that there's no substance to it, Chazal did not feel that way. The Rambam writes this was all vanity and falsehood, but Chazal and the Gemara, I say, just didn't feel that it was all falsehoods. They felt that there was real substance to these activities, just prohibited. I'm going to skip the case because it gets very tricky, but it had to do with some kind of, again, animals and working with animals. Kshafim. Skip down to about five lines to the end of this paragraph. Hine mevu'ar nigla she'inyan ha'kishuf hem sovim she'megia mimenu amiti lo medume levad. Clearly, Chazal felt from this story that the matter of witchcraft or kishuf was something which was real and not something imaginary by itself.
And you're supposed to believe it.
Well, you're supposed to believe that it might be substantive, but not...
It's still usser.
In other words, you don't have to believe it. You don't want to believe it. There's no obligation on either side. Well, let's put it this way. If you hold that there's substance to it, but the Torah prohibited it, then there's nothing heretical about believing that it's nonsense and the Torah prohibited it. But if you believe that it's nonsense, then the other side of the debate is borderline heresy. That's why there's an imbalance in these two sides of the equation. Let's call them side A and side B. Side A believes Ibn Ezra, Rambam, this whole thing is a bunch of hooey and hogwash and trickery and nonsense, and the Torah prohibited because it's
nonsense.
Side B believes, Ramban, Dreshotaran, that there's real substance, and because there's substance, right, the Torah prohibited it. Side B would hold that if you think, like side A, okay, you're mistaken. But side A would say, if you think like side B, it's borderline heresy. Mm-hmm. That's why the Ibn Ezra calls them Rekei Moach, and the Rambam says the Chasvei Dat and Schalim, because if you really believe that it's a bunch of hogwash, then the notion that you can somebody could somehow believe that they're real and the Torah prohibited them, like that's borderline heresy. So there's two sides have an imbalance. It's like the debate over... there's a famous debate in the time of the Gaonim over Gilgul Neshamot, reincarnation. Two sides of this debate. There are those who believe that there's some role to it in Jewish thought, and the others who believe that if you believe that there's any kind of side to reincarnation in Jewish thought, you're an absolute heretic and have no business in the Jewish world. The debate was very imbalanced. So if Sadia Gaon writes about this debate in language that is extraordinary. He says anybody believes in the reincarnation of souls is an absolute heretic and outside the pale of normative Judaism. And there are others who say no, on the contrary, it's real and it's part of Jewish life and it's part of Jewish thought. It's not the same as Tchiyat HaMetim. Reincarnation is not the same as resurrection of the dead. Resurrection of the dead, Tchiyat HaMetim is fundamental, everybody agrees to. Reincarnation is the idea that a soul leaves the world and comes back in some kind of either person or other form to finish that which it didn't finish the first time it was here. The debate was intense because the issues were, they struggled with touched upon fundamental issues of theology. It wasn't something I said. The opinions were intense, and because they were so controversial, right, they got even more intense. So here, the moment you touch on something which philosophically is challenging.
This reincarnation in the soul, I didn't quite get that. There's a difference between
Tchias Amesim and reincarnation.
Correct. Gilgul Neshamot is not Triyat HaMetim. Gilgul Neshamot is a philosophical worldview that holds that a soul, when it leaves this world,
can come somewhere else and finish the job.
And in any form.
Right.
Body, human, animal, any kind of form.
And the other side?
Triyat HaMetim is a concept of that sometime in Yimot HaMashiach.
It only happens once, though, right?
Yeah, Triyat HaMetim is about the dead coming back to life, right? What it means and how it works, we have no idea, but that's one of the Ikari
Emunah. Reincarnation on one time basis.
Reincarnation is a concept which has no sources in the classic Jewish thinking. It's a Kabbalistic concept that's discussed in some Kabbalistic sources.
It's in
certain writings of Kabbalah.
I was wondering, because I've
heard about it. Sajagon writes extensively about it and very intensely.
But the soul part is different.
Chiyas HaMeisim and Gilgul Neshamot are two different subjects. Yes.
Interesting.
Yes. Okay, back to... All right, so there you have this debate, and on both sides, major pillars of Jewish thought, Rambam, Ibn Ezra on the one hand, Ramban, Ran, on the other. And if we go back in time to the generation before the Rishonim, remember, you know how the chronological structure of Jewish thinkers is timelined. Okay? So you have, besides individuals, you have periods of history. So you have all of Tanakh, and then you have time with the Nevi'im. Post Tanakh, you have the time of the Mishnah and the Gemara, which we refer to as Chazal. Then you have a period of time post Talmud, before the period of the Rishonim, which we refer to as the time of the Gaonim.
Okay,
so the Gaonim are earlier than the Rishonim. They're the early generations of the Rishonim. The Rishonim, Rambam and Ramban and etc., sort of the next piece of it till the writing of the Shulchan Aruch. And then post the writing of the Shulchan Aruch, you have what we refer to as the Achronim, which is pretty much any Jewish philosopher, thinker, or writer in halacha post the writing of the Shulchan Aruch.
Where are we up to in the timeline at the end here?
Technically, in the time of the Achronim.
Yeah, I know. So, what year is that?
The Shulchan Aruch is written in the early 16th, in the 16th century. So pretty much from the 16th century till today is the time of the Achronim.
1500s.
The Rishonim goes from the 9th century of the Common Era, which is the time of the Gaonim, early Gaonim, till the writing of the Shulchan Aruch.
So 1500s is at the end there.
So let's come back to the Radak. Source 7 on the other side of the page. Let's come back to our story and our paragraph. Obviously, for the Radak, who was a commentary on Tanakh, was concerned with the story of Balat Ov, and how does this shtim, how does this jive, how does this connect with our broader machloket about the authenticity of the activities of the Balat Ov? Was she real? If she was real, then that result, right? This chapter would challenge the Rambam and the Ibn Ezra in a very significant way. If it's all a fake, as the Rambam and the Ibn Ezra say, then how do they read the story of Balat Ov? Right, it's in Shmuel.
I mean, they put it in Shmuel, so it's not like it's some obscure thing in...
No, this is Tanakh. This is our holy books. So, here's the Radak. The Radak is long because it goes through all the different opinions. This is sort of one of those classic pieces. It goes through all of the different permutations. We'll try to get through as much of it as we can. Va'ani wa'elefaresh hena ma'aseh ha'ov lefi ma'shenimtza katuv. I need to explain this whole activity of the Ov as we find it written, in accordance with what Chazal tell us. Amru Razal, Razal and Chazal is the same phrase. It's Rabbeinu Zichronam Livracha or Chachamenu Zichronam Livracha. You'll find the Rishonim use both of them interchangeable.
Never heard of Razal.
Yeah, you'll find it. It's gone out of vogue, if you will. there were many Mefarshim that used that phrase, Razal instead of Chazal. It's the same, more or less the same acronym, Chachamenu Zichronam Livracha or Rabbeinu Zichronam Livracha. Claim that Baal Ov Zeh HaMedaber Ben HaPrakim Uben Atzilei Yadav, right, this Baal Ov was somebody whose the voice emanated from some between some limbs that they were not from their mouth, like a ventriloquism. V'yodoni zeh maniach etzem chaya sheshma yadua befiv umedabim dvarim ha'atidim. Put some bone known to them between the mouths, and they would speak of the futures. Right? This was the first futures market. Uperush miben aprakim shemashmiya kol namuch miben pirkei verav. They would engage a very small, very low, quiet voice that would emanate from somewhere in their body. Umitachat shechyo ayadei maasim shosim. Right, they would, or from under their arms, in some kind of activity they would do, like mekish bizuotav, they would knock and clap and giant dance and do some sort of physical activity. V'yeshomim af maktir ktoret l'shed, they would bring incense to these demons. V'ashed hu onavem medaber, and these demons were the ones who would answer and speak anything's possible. V'yodemu razal shlosha dvarim ne'emru b'ma'ale zchoro ma'ale zchoro. Chazal go on to say that there were three things related to, or three types of experiences in this moment of the medium and what they would conjure up. Hama'aleh ro'eu ve'eno shom'o, the one who conjures, the one who brings the dead back to converse with us, sees but doesn't hear. U'mishit tzarich lo, the person who engages the medium, shom'o ve'eno ro'eu, hears but does not see. And mi she'eno tzarich lo ve'lo shom'o, and the one who's neither not engaged in any way, neither needs nor
hears,
mi she'eno tzarich lo, one who doesn't need them, meaning a bystander, lo shom'o ve'lo ro'eu, doesn't see and doesn't hear. Meaning, let's assume for the moment you have in the room three people. The medium, the person who hires the medium, and a bodyguard.
Who's the bodyguard
for? Anybody. Third party bystander. The medium will see but not hear. The payer, right, the payer of her services will hear but not see. And the bystander will neither hear nor see. Okay? Kach, and the example that he brings is the story of Shmuel. When Shaul entered into the house of this Balatov, who did he come with?
His son of his men, no?
Right. They're not in the story.
Not at all.
Maybe they stay outside the tent.
Maybe. So the Radha claims, Kach Shmuel, Isha She'elato, the woman who conjured up Shmuel, Ratao, she saw him. Remember, what was Shaul's question to her? What does he look like? She saw him. V'lo shemato, but she never heard him. Because Shmuel's response, Shmuel's conversation with Shaul is very intense. It's very harsh. She doesn't know anything about it. The moment it's over, and he's frightened out of his boots, and he can't even like eat. He's so tired, and he's so... What does she do? She says to him, why don't you sit down and have a meal? You're going to war. You need to have a meal, right? She doesn't realize that she's providing him his last supper. Because he's going to die in battle the next day. Right? So she claims her doc doesn't hear what Shmuel told Shaul, which is that macharata iti, by tomorrow morning you're a dead man. Mm-hmm. She never heard that. She just saw Shmuel, and Shaul heard Shmuel but didn't see him, because it was Shaul who turned to Shmuel, to the medium, to ask her to describe what she saw. Right?
it's complicated.
Okay? So she's seeing, he's hearing. Shaul shayat samich lo shamo v'lo ra'au, saw but didn't see. The Avner v'Amasa, the two people who were with him, Avner and Amasa, shelo nitzarchu lo lo shamo v'lo ra'au, they're not in the story, they're just standing there, they don't know what's going on. So says the Radak.
How do they know when this is all over? How do each one of them know?
However the story describes it, right? Shmuel says his piece and leaves. It's no idea.
How does
it gets better.
The Radak know all this stuff?
No, he's working off the story. Well, the first part of the story, the first part is Chazal. The first part of that is that there's three groups here. There's the Tzarich Lo and the Mar'eyu, it's at Mal'eyu. Right, that's a Gemara. He's applying it to the story.
Gemara.
That's Od Amu Razal. Okay. Shloshat dvarim ne'emu b'malah zuchoro.
So this is all that's from the Gemara.
Okay, and then the application to the story of Shmuel is the Radak. Then the Radak says, wait a second. V'ra'inu machloket ben ha-geonim. The Geonim, before the Rambam, before the Ibn Ezra, before the Radak, before the early Geonim, they got into this. And they waited on this debate. But the Vaza, v'kulam nishtavu, they all believed, all the Geonim believed, ki maseha ov hevo v'to v'divrei chazav v'yitul. That this Balat Ov, the story, is the whole activity, the enterprise of mediums, is nothing but false, hevel, vanity, falsehoods, and hitul is like
divrei kezav.
No, hitul is like to make fun of something. Right? It's all nonsense. Mm. However, there are degrees of nonsense. What does that mean? Yesh mehem omrim. So, if it's nonsense, how do you understand a story?
Right.
If it's pure nonsense, how do you understand Balatov?
Why is it written if it's pure nonsense?
Right. She conjures up the spirit of Shmuel. So, according to this opinion, which he'll identify at the end as the opinion of Shmuel ben Chofnigon, according to this opinion, it works as follows: Ki lo diber Shmuel im Shaul. Shmuel didn't really speak to Shaul. V'chas v'shalom lo ala Shmuel mekivro, God forbid Shmuel's soul didn't come out of its grave. V'lo diber, and didn't speak. It's all nonsense, says Shmuel Chavnim. Ava ha'isha asta ha'kob ramaot. This is all exactly what Balei Ov do. They make it all up. They have a whole elaborate story. Ki miyad ekira ki Sha'ulu, she recognized right away that he was Sha'ul. Ach, but because she wanted to prove to show to Shaul that she was real, so she pretended and she said, she spoke as if she was speaking in Shaul's voice. She said, why did you disturb me? I'm Shaul. Why did you wake me up here? Okay. Now here's the key. Right? And you ever see these in, like, it's so modern. The interpretation is extraordinarily modern. Okay, so if you were like to design in television or in a movie how a Balat Ov would operate and pull the wool over somebody's eyes, right? You'd stick somebody under the table.
To talk.
Right? So that's exactly what he says. V'derech Balat Ov lavi ben adam shemidaber mitoch machbo'o b'lashon namuch. They would bring a third person to sit under the table and speak in a low voice. Low voice, you couldn't identify where the voice was coming from. And they would be under the table. V'kasher ba Shaul lidrosh me'ita, when Shaul came in to seek her wisdom, v'da'ata oto, and she saw him, nivhal, she saw him confused, yada'a, she knew, ki lemachaye yotzei l'mechama, she knew that tomorrow morning Shaul's going out to battle, v'chol Yisrael ayu b'pachad gadol, and she knew that all of Israel was extraordinarily frightened by the army of the Plishtim encamped there in Emek Israel, and she knew about the fact that Shaul had killed all of the Kohanei Hashem and therefore was not in favor with God. So what did she do? Sama befi hamagid hadvarim hane'amarim b'parsha. So she fed this guy under the table who's hiding there pretending to be Shmuel. She fed him all of the answers that she wanted him to give. And so every comment in the parsha is her feeding this guy under the table the information to give to Shaul.
And how did she know all this?
So he's going to explain. Umashe amar vayomer Shmuel el Shaul. And ever the text says that Shmuel spoke to Shaul, al machshevet Shaul ki haya choshev ki Shmuel ya medaber elav. It's telling us from Shaul's perspective, from Shaul's vantage point, Shaul thought he was talking to Shmuel. But in fact, who was doing the talking?
The guy under the table.
Now, the problem here is that Shmuel says things that are very specific to Shaul. Amalek and David and the reference, right?
And this person knows these things.
So he explains. Umashi Amar, the quote, V'lo asita charona po ba'amalek. Remember when you said you didn't? Yadu ha'yadavar zeh. This was public knowledge. This wasn't anything secret. Ki mi'ota sha'a amar lo Shmuel v'yimazcha mi'ot melech. And that was when Shmuel rejected Sha'ul as king. So that wasn't a secret. It was already davar yadua. Uma she'amar, what about the other statement? L'reyacha l'David, I'm giving the kingdom over to David. Yadua ya. That also was known. B'chol Yisrael ki David nimshach l'melech. It was known throughout Israel that David was the anointed one to be designated king. Uma she'amar, now the clincher. Machar atah u'banecha imi. Tomorrow you and your sons are with me, right? As if to say you're going to die in battle. Midrach svara amarza. That was logical. Like, what else is going to happen to Shaul? He's going to go into battle, frightened, his army's dissipated, he's exhausted, he's hungry, he's frightened out of his wits. The Plishtim have reached all the way to Emek Israel. You think Shaul has a chance, and all of his generals have defected to David. You think he has a chance in this battle?
And so everybody knew this too?
So that's why Shaul was so afraid, right? Why does he go to Shmuel in the first place if he wasn't so afraid? So says the Radak. So clearly that must have been something which he could have guessed.
Zeu perush Rav Shmuel ben
Chofni Gaon Zal. This is all the interpretation, the opinion of Rav Shmuel ben Chofni Gaon. The Amar, and Rav Shmuel goes on to say, and this is really very interesting, Afo pisha mashmu'ut divrei chachamim zal bagmara. Chazal, in their understanding of the story, the Mishnah and the Gemara, they didn't take this tack. Their approach in the Gemara is to assume that Balatov was real. Gemetaya shehechiata haisha et Shmuel, that she brought back the spirit of Shmuel. Says Rav Shmuel Mechofnigan, and this is the core of the whole story. Lo yukublu hadvarim b'makom sheyesh makchishim lahem min hasechel. Cannot accept the story at face value if it denies logic, if it absolutely flies in the face of rational, logical thinking. If that's the case, it has to be reinterpreted. This was an opinion that was very prevalent during the time of the Rishonim, even till today, that human rational thinking is paramount. And if it doesn't work within our rational frame of reference, if we can't accept it at face value, then we have to reinterpret it. So it's totally irrational to assume that Balatov has any substance, says Rav Shmuel Mechofnigan, and therefore this can't be the story. So it has to be that she's a fake. Even though Chazal said she was real.
Is that the accepted opinion?
There is no single accepted opinion. I'm just telling you what the...
All I feel is that when you say it's common knowledge about Amalek, it's common knowledge about this. I mean, it wasn't like the time of Twitter and whatever. I mean, how common could it be?
Yeah, well, right. It's not so uncommon after all. It's been a few years already. I mean, it's not a
secret.
But
you're taking like several things and saying it's common knowledge.
Right.
Maybe
one would be common knowledge.
Okay. I hear you.
I mean, not that I believe that, on the other hand, that she brought Shmuel up, but I don't know.
Right.
Whatever.
Okay.
Very confused.
Very confused.
Yes. Okay. So that's option A. Option A is she's a total fake, and she's very bright, and she made the whole thing up.
The Rambam and,
which would be in line with the Rambam and the Ibn Ezra. Right. They all got it from the Gaonim. Right?
Yeah.
It's all Masorah from the Gaon. Now, wait a second. We're not finished, though. Aval, Rav Sadia v'Rav Hai Gaonim. So now they have two. Remember, these are very famous opinions. Right? Rav Sadia Gaon is one of the anchors of Jewish philosophy and thought. Rav Sadia Gaon is famous. Rav Haigon less so, but in the world of halacha he's very famous because Rav Haigon wrote a series of Shailos and Tshuvos which we still have today, so he's often quoted in halacha. So Rav Sadia Gaon, Rav Haigon Zal Amru Emetu Ki Rachoku Shetedah HaEishah HaAtidot. True, it is not possible that she could know futures and could know events and that she could be real. V'chein and not possible that she could conjure the dead in the medium of Balatov. These things are just not rational. They don't exist. They're total fake. And that's just the way it is. However, Achaboreit Barach Hechiat Shmuel. But the spirit of Shmuel comes back, not because she brought him back, but because the Ribbono Shel Olam brought him back. Kedei lesaper leShaul et kol haKorot haAtidot lavo alav, so that he could let Shaul know what was going to happen to him.
That was kindness.
V'hi haisha asher lo yada b'chol eleh, and that's why she, who didn't know about any of these things,
she didn't hear anything.
Nivhala, she was confused. K'mo shenema, batizak b'kol gadol, she cried out. She saw Shmuel and she got frightened. V'asher amra haisha et mi elelach, when she said to Shaul, who should I bring back? Divrei hitulim him. She was poking fun of him. She was like just taunting him, teasing him. She goes, okay, who do you want me to bring up? Kidata ya lasot kiminagam, kiminaga elad divrehem, kiminaga elad divrehem. Right. To her intention was to do what she always does, which is stick somebody under the table, like Rav Chafni, Shmuel Chafni says. But the moment she started, it was real. And I can't get out of my head elef alfei havdalos, but I can't get out of my head an image from the movie Ghost. You ever see this movie Ghost?
Yes. No.
It's a Whoopi Goldberg movie.
It's a classic.
Okay, I really shouldn't put this on the recording. It's a classic.
It's okay.
Go watch it. If you want to waste time, go watch it. It's a very cute movie. It's one of these love stories. It's very nice. But the core of it is Whoopi Goldberg plays this medium who's a total fake. Until she sees a real ghost. And now, and she hears the voice. She's the only one who can hear the voice. But in the movie, it's real. So now she's totally shocked because she screams and she's like, oh my God, like she doesn't know what to do with herself because she doesn't realize when she comes to the realization that he's real and that nobody else can see him, like, then she's spooked out of her brain.
That's what
Sajigun says was exactly what's happening here. She's a total fake till Shmuel showed up at the doorstep. And now she doesn't know what to do with herself. Right? All right. Third opinion.
This all goes back to Hashem because Hashem did this.
But that makes a lot of sense. But I mean,
I'm going to hold that for a second.
That's what I like.
Okay, I'm going to hold that for a second.
Like this one.
Says the Radak, V'yesh litmoa l'divrei ha-geonim ha-ele. He says this is shocking. Both these opinions of the Gaonim are to be dismayed. Im HaKadosh Baruch Hu echiyat Shmuel kedei leseper leshol korot haba'ot alav, lama lo amar lo al yedei chalomot, al yedei urim, al yedei neviim. If God wanted to speak to Shaul via Shmuel, you had the Urim V'Tumim, you had the chalomot, you had the neviim, you had all the means by which God had shut down communication with Shaul. Ela al yedei isha balatov. He has to come to him through balatov. What, it didn't occur to Shaul, the great wise Shaul, king of all of Israel, that these mediums were fake, they had somebody under the table, couldn't pick up the skirt of the table and check? ומי אמר שיתאו בזה ואין זה הדת מקבלו והנכונו מה שפירשנו. He likes, so the Radak sides with the first, with the early opinion that it's real, that there's substance to it, there's nobody under the table. I happen to be, you asked me what I think. I happen to side with Sajigon on this one. I think the Balat Ov is a fake, but Shmuel was real. I think Balat Ov was a fake, Shmuel was real.
As that's a nicer way of looking at the whole thing.
Right, I think so. And I think that now, to answer the Radak's challenge, Radak raises at the end two very powerful challenges. Number one, what God couldn't communicate with Shaul via Nevi'im. Yeah, he had to go to Balat Ov.
Or even in a dream.
So,
but he was so untrusting to all of this.
Number one. In other words, he had rejected the normal mechanisms of communication with God throughout his life. Right? All of his lists of chataim were all to despair or to discredit the Urim V'Tumim and not listen to the Nevi'im. So to some extent, the fact that he goes to the Balat Ov, I think is part of the desperation that he's reached in his life. And so God meets him there,
That's kind of nice of God to do that. It sort of let him down slower.
But, of course, it has a very tragic ending. The other question is, Shaul never knew that these guys were fake. Right. Up, and I think when you're in that kind of desperation, you do desperate things right. that are not rational.
So he's
certainly not rational. But I happen to like this opinion of Sadie Gaon. I think it fits in the context of the story.
It's a much nicer look.
I think it is. It would be hard pressed for me to read the story that she's made this all up, but she really does seem frightened by it. Vatera ha'isha et Shmuel vatizak b'kol gadol. She sees Shmuel and she screams. She's really frightened by it. It's very possible that she's never had a real experience with a real successful soul that she's brought back from the dead. This is the first time.
She really could have been
shocked. She saw and she vatizak b'kol gadol. And at that point she turns to Shaul and like now she realizes. So I think that Sadie Gaon is onto something in this description. I think that she is a total fake till now. And suddenly Shmuel is there and she doesn't know what to do with it.
It's a nice fairy tale ending like in some places.
There you go. Wow. All right.
On that note,
we will stop here.
I'm not going to be till a while from now. I just want to ask a question about you know the forecast.
Should I keep it recording or turn it off?